And welcome back to Coast to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment. We're going to take your phone calls next with Richard Belzer on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We'll take your calls in just a moment with Richard Belzer. You know, Richard, after reading the book, The Hit List,
yes.
I'm kind of glad I wasn't a witness to the Kennedy assassination.
Or overheard something.
Unbelievable how this is happening. And a lot of these people, other than being in the wrong place at the wrong time, they didn't have anything to do with it. They were there. They saw things. They were witnesses.
Well, they heard something before the assassination, and then they talked about it. Or after the fact, I mean, officials were murdered. A former CIA guy was murdered, and it's kind of chilling that these high profile murders happened, and it's just we just keep going along like people don't want to wrap their head around the fact that the government may be involved in these things, and I understand that because, your parents, your religion, your government, we were brought up to respect these institutions.
Absolutely.
And they're all falling apart, in the last
there would be no,
10,
no
20
way.
Years.
My late father, there would be no way that he would believe that government would be capable of doing any of this.
I know. And a lot of
they
people today can't. And it's not because they're stupid. It's just that there's a psychological thing that happens that I found. I've spoken to really, really smart people. I mean, who just can't go there. They can't go beyond a certain. And it's interesting. You think, well, if somebody's very intelligent, and you show them a fact, mm-hmm. they would understand and believe it. But no,
they won't take it.
It's something that there's an emotional element to certain information that people cannot compute.
Well, and there's a big difference between love of country and distrust of government. And that's what I think a lot of people can't separate the two. They think that if you criticize government,
yeah, that's a good point.
You hate the country.
No.
That's not the case.
No, I'm disappointed in the country. And, a true patriot protects its country against the government. I mean, It's
absolutely.
Like, I'm not saying overthrow the government, but the system of only two parties, the Republicrats, they're both owned by the same people. In Europe, they have 14, 15 parties. In the primaries, people get out, vent, and they'll vote for some extreme thing to make a point, and then it settles down, and then they vote. You know what I mean? There should be like five different aspects of the Republican Party. There should be fiscal, religious, whatever. There should be a Green Party, a Labor Party, different permutations of the right and left, and give people choices. But that's why a lot of people feel they can't have an effect and don't vote, because they know that these guys are bought and sold, and most of them, don't have their interests at heart.
See, I would have won had I been president one day.
Yes.
God forbid.
You would be fine.
I would have wanted my cabinet to be the best people. I don't care what.
The best and brightest.
That's right. I don't care what party they were from. I don't care whether they were libertarians, independents, Republicans, Democrats. I want the best people.
Yeah, Abe Lincoln, team of rivals. He hired people that were, and John Kennedy
were better than him.
And Kennedy had Republicans in his administration.
All right, let's take some calls here for you. Let's pick it up by going to Marion, North Carolina. Roy's with us on Coast to Coast. Roy, go ahead.
Wow, it's Christmas. Mr. Belzer.
Richard. Yes, sir.
I can prove to you that the rats who pulled off the Boston Marathon bombing are the same crowd that pulled off the JFK assassination. It's the war party. They want Iran bad. That's why there's this easy connection to Muslims. They want to grab all the world's wealth while the getting's good. And I believe it's like the Civil War. Barack Obama is just hated by them. It's the Tea Party, Sarah Palin. I hate to say it, George. It's Ted Nugent and Alex Jones. All these guys know. Those boys, those Zarnaev boys, had $1 million
Who?
Worth of help. The Zarnaev boys, is that the name?
Thanks for your call. It's very, very fishy, this thing in Boston. We don't really know too much about it because, as we've been discussing, it's hard to trust the official word now, even if it's true, which is sad. And I think that no matter who was involved in it, our government is studying the reaction and testing out things like soft martial law and stuff. Whether they did it or not, they will exploit the situation.
That's the other question, Richard. Why does this all seem to be coming down so quickly? The martial law, the privacy issues, there's going to be more cameras. People are going to say, well, it worked in this case. Let's put them all over the place. Why does it seem like they have run out of time and they've got to do it?
There's this false urgency. More people die of bee stings than of terrorist attacks. As my daughter says, more people die of a coconut falling off a tree.
Yeah, or stumbling your toe.
To lock down two states, part of Connecticut and all of Massachusetts, because of these two kids, is very illogical. It should be a wake-up call to anyone who in any way, you know, is skeptical, healthfully skeptical. I was shocked and appalled that they were pulling people out of their houses at gunpoint that had nothing to miles away, that nothing to do with this murder, this heinous act. So I think, you know, the government used the event to test things and do things. And like after 9/11, Karl Rove was at a Yankee game right after 9/11. The World Series went on that year.
Yeah, that's right.
Which I think was great. And Karl Rove was sitting there and so, you know, all these people in the stadium and roaring. And he goes, you know, this is just like Nuremberg. You know, this is like the control, the one thing. Since World War One, there have been studies of how people react to different things. It's, you know, I hate to say this, but we are much more controlled than we could possibly imagine, myself included. They're so good at it. You watch a TV, you watch the news, and then there's a commercial. The commercial's made by the same people that make the news. So it's like you watch a news person and see a news story, then you see a commercial. So the veracity, the gravitas or whatever of the news bleeds over into the commercial. Do you understand what I'm saying?
It all flows.
Also, another curious thing about the major networks and their news shows, you ever notice who advertises on them? McDonnell Douglas? What, are you going to buy a jet?
You and I will again.
No, but these giant corporations that have nothing to do with the individual buy time on these morning shows and these news shows, so they won't do stories about them.
That's interesting.
They own it.
That is interesting. Well, let me ask this. When we went into Afghanistan
to
get bin Laden, most of the Americans were in support of that. I think...
Well, we didn't go in and get them.
It was like 80%. However, if they told that 80% back in 2001, we went in there in October of 2001.
Right.
If they told that 80%, you're going to be there 12 to 15 years later.
Longer than Vietnam.
How many of those people would have said, go for it, go in there?
Exactly.
I would say would be minimal at best.
Well, look at all the money they made. First of all, bin Laden, here's another thing that people have to understand. Bin Laden was not a mastermind. Bin Laden had a lot of money.
He was the financier.
And these thugs, you know, Al-Qaeda, bin Laden did not use the term Al-Qaeda until after 9/11. We invented Al-Qaeda as a way to ensnare bin Laden in a legal lawsuit. Like, you know what the RICO statute is in America? The thing, if you are you commit a crime and you're conspiring, you know, as a racket, you know, it was meant to, you know, bust mobsters, but they used that mentality to put bin Laden in this group so they could arrest the group and he would be included in it. But what we've learned about bin Laden is that, first of all, we trained him to fight with the Mujahideen against the communists, and then we just left, you know, and left them in place. Bin Laden was just a rich guy who these thugs who call themselves Al-Qaeda. Any gang could say I'm Al-Qaeda. You know, there's no...
Or whatever you want to be
there's
called.
There's no worldwide terrorist network, believe me.
It's not like James
Bond.
There
are little bands of people here and there. Of course there's terrorists, but anyway, so he was just used by these groups. He's no mastermind. And the fact that the idea that, you know, if we get him, then terrorism will end, it's just so naive and patronizing. And who knows if that was even him anyway. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter.
Well, and we know that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, he was one of the masterminds. He went to bin Laden and wanted the money.
We're told. Right. Yeah, well, that's what bin Laden was. He was a money man. Now, when he was, when he, we now know that when he was cornered in Tora Bora, we sent, we had our best troops. We sent them all. We got them out of there. And what happened was we knew where he was, and Bin Laden told the local tribesmen, how much are the Americans offering you? And he said, all right. And he just bought them off.
Yeah.
And they told and us, the Americans, he got away. We couldn't find him. But he just, you know, we didn't want to find him. Every, if you notice, Noriega was our guy till he wanted to turn our dollars into yen before the euro.
Right. And then he wanted his own deal.
Bin Laden was our guy. Hussein was our guy. They all, Hitler was our guy. You know, it's all about sociopaths in positions of power who lust for money and control.
Karzai was our guy. That's changed, you know. You can tell.
He's
strange.
It's amazing that he's still, his brother's one of the biggest drug dealers in the world, and he insults us to our face every day.
And we put him in there.
Yeah.
Let's go to our Skype caller, Cindy, in Tampa, Florida. Go ahead, Cindy.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi, Richard. It is, I, oh my God, I just wanted to first of all say how much I love you on Law and Order.
Thank you.
And I hope you don't leave like some of the other ones have.
Well, if they pay me, I'll be back.
Well,
you've been there a long time.
14 years.
Who you are, you know, your real self, like the conspiracy theorist, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's a, I'm lucky to have a part that was close to what I would really do if I was in that position.
Right.
What is your question, darling?
Well, I got a couple of, sure. You know, I used to be very trusting and, you know, not anymore. And I was like 2.5 years old when Kennedy got shot. And my dad had actually recorded all this. And he, this was back, you know, 65. And he used to, you know.
He recorded what, the local news while it was going on? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, he was, right. He was recording everything. Mm-hmm. And back when they had those big old tape machines. And he always said it was the government. It was
really? Even then?
Yes. And my dad, you know, was born in 1914. And, you know, he loved his country. He served in the Navy. He was a merchant marine. But he said that you can clearly hear at least 3 shots. And he said there was somebody in the government that didn't like what Kennedy wanted to do.
Your dad was very astute that early on.
Yeah, so I grew up believing that, you know, and but I also have a theory that I'd like to get both you and George's. I've been wanting to ask this for such a long time.
Yes.
About I can't remember the name of the movie with the military. Frank Sinatra and
the Manchurian Candidate.
Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. That and also, you know, the psychiatric meds that, you know,
yes,
they're giving. Does anybody else kind of like feel that the government is doing this to
doing what?
Help the cause to get rid of our Second Amendment, the First Amendment?
You mean all these things?
Doing what?
Well, like, you know, like Hassan or, you know, getting the killings.
Yeah. Thank you for calling in for your question. What's happening is whether it's such a it's like a puzzle because people don't now reflexively now don't trust the government. So when something happens, in the old days, we would accept the official version. You know, we were naive
and never questioned it.
But now they're almost arrogantly forcing us to question them, especially with the, I think the big thing was when we discovered that we're giving billions upon billions of dollars to foreign banks, and some of those foreign banks own our houses. And like, wait a minute, what? You know, I think that was a big, the last financial crisis really was a big wake-up call for a lot of people. And I personally was affected by how loans are bundled and you don't know who owns a house. And it was a gigantic, you know, I call it reverse bank robbery.
Sure.
The bank, you know, John Dillinger robbed the banks during the Depression. They rob us. So to answer your question, the government may do some dark things, but they'll definitely exploit things that they didn't do to their own purposes. So it's very, very sticky.
What kind of a planet are we leaving behind for our kids and their kids?
Actually, you know, I just read the other day, it's the hottest it's been in 1,400 years.
Yeah.
But there's no climate change. I think that other countries, I'm fortunate enough to travel, and America, for some reason, there's this thing that we have perfected, unfortunately, of instant gratification. You know, there's a certain, they've actually measured how much time you need to do. Like, there was a thing I did for Comedy Central in the early days. It was like 22 seconds long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's called short attention span theater.
Well, that's why sound bites are so quick.
And they've they've learned how to psychologically use key phrases and images to get messages across to us. Now, if you're an American and you're born here, you're bombarded from the earliest you can remember your whole entire life with logos, images, commercials, propaganda, if you will, and people are affected in ways they don't even know. And because it's years, and myself included, years and years of conditioning. So when you see something happen, you have a conditioned response to it. But now people are beginning, because of the internet, 1984 goes both ways. They see us, but we're watching them. People are beginning to get hit in the head with a flat piece of wood saying, wait a minute, you know, I paid for my house and I, you know, now they're taking it from me. And, you know, some people have sued their banks and the banks couldn't find the paperwork.
Right.
And the people got to keep their houses.
Yeah, they're still in it. Yeah, that's true. Let's go to Gary, Indianapolis, Indiana, wildcard line. Gary, take it away.
Hey, George, love the show.
Thank you, Gary.
Richard, listening to your conversation tonight, it made so many things click in my head from a conversation that I had about 1981 or so.
Yes.
I was in college. I lived in a really bad neighborhood, and I lived next door to some really rough people. And when you said about let them drink and let them talk a little more, that struck this conversation back in my memory.
Right.
I talked to a gentleman who said he was actually doing time in Texas
right.
in the early 60s. And he said that he was on a plane. I don't actually recall why he was on a plane.
Right.
But while he was on the plane, he said they stopped the plane on the runway, and they brought in a gurney. And he said, on that gurney was Jack Ruby. And he said that they brought him right in front of him.
Was he alive?
Yeah, he was alive. And he said that he actually talked to him. And he said, Jack Ruby told him that he had been injected with cancer.
Yes.
And I just wonder if you think that was true, if that was a valid comment, or was this just an old drunk telling
a
story?
No, he died from a very fast acting cancer, which was incredibly unusual because, you know, he was getting ready to testify. And all of a sudden he told his relatives that they were giving him these painful injections, and it was an incredibly fast acting cancer. And we now know through the Freedom of Information Act that the CIA has ways of cadmium. They make it into a aerosol.
It's a little powdery aerosol.
You could spray it,
and you're
if you
gone.
Ingest it,
you're gone.
Yeah. Or, you know, I mean, so I'm not surprised that may very well be true, that story, sir.
We're going to come back, Richard, in just a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take some final phone calls. Very fast night. Richard Belzer, our guest, his book, Hit List. By the way, I looked at Amazon.com. It's quickly going up the charts.
Thanks to you.
We will be back in a moment. Those of you on hold, don't hang up. Don't lose your place in line. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories. Make sure you're part of that. And when we come back in a moment, let's take final phone calls with Richard Belzer right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Richard Belzer with us. Richard, fast night, huh?
You know, I was just saying that time flies when you're having fun, George.
It sure does. It sure does. You doing much traveling?
Yeah, well, I was in France for 5 weeks recently working on my next book, because when I go there, I can
chill,
go into my cocoon and have all my research there. And, of course, New York and actually next month I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. I'm visiting a couple of veterans hospitals. I work with the veterans. And a week from tonight on my show, Law and Order Special Victims Unit, is an episode about PTSD, I lobbied our show to do an episode about a soldier with PTSD, because a lot of these kids that come back from Iraq and Afghanistan are demonized, and they use this catch, you know, PTSD. Anytime there's a shooting or something,
right?
Post-traumatic stress disorder. Those people aren't violent, and I really think America should take a step back and think about what we do when we have a war and we send youngsters off who go for 99% of them go for noble reasons to defend their country. And then they come back and they have mountains of paperwork. And it's very hard for a lot of these guys to, they have to be a hero over there and then a hero over here. It's very intimidating, a lot of the stuff they have to go through. And there's some great work being done by these doctors in the VA hospitals. But I think us as civilians have to be really extra vigilant and compassionate about veterans that come home. There's a tremendous amount of suicide among the vets, tremendous amount of homelessness. And, you know, you're in a pitched battle. You don't know who the enemy is. Then you come home. It's not easy. And so we really have to be cognizant of, because they're us. We send them off. We're not there.
They come back different people, don't they?
Yeah, in many, many different ways. And in the old days, a lot of people would have died of injuries. Now, people survive horrific injuries and live with, you know, without limbs and with, you know, whereas they would have died in other wars. So we have a lot of survivors who are, you know, injured, and they need to be. We have to take care of these people. You know, it's there are people that commit suicide who aren't in Iraq or Afghanistan. They're just, you know, soldiers committing suicide.
Right. And that rate is going up and up.
Yeah, and we really, you know, you can't send people back for 4 and 5 tours the way we did. In World War II, they had R&R. You'd be on the front lines fighting, but then they pull them out and put other troops in so you could grieve your buddies and you could rest and go back. Yeah. We didn't do that.
No. Let's take some final calls here. We'll go to Michael, Virginia Beach, Virginia, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Michael. You're on with Richard Belzer.
Thank you very much, Richard. Yeah, we owe a lot to these vets, and we owe them an explanation for Kennedy's death, his effort to try to keep them out of Vietnam.
That's right. That's what he was concerned about. He had been to war. He was a true war hero. He knew what it was like, and he told Tip O'Neill, we got to get our boys out of there. I want to get him out of there. You know, he told a lot of people that, and he sent sent Maxwell Taylor and McNamara to Vietnam, and they came back and said, we got to get out.
Yeah, but let me get my question in.
Sure.
You said that Alan Dulles got the Vatican to issue passports to smuggle thousands of Nazis into this country.
Yes, sir.
Maybe it was the other way around. Maybe it was the Vatican whose mafia control so much of this country. Maybe it was the Vatican that ordered Alan Dulles to do this.
Wow. That's interesting.
I'm
with you. Go ahead.
Okay. Because the Vichy government allowed the Nazis to smuggle gold into their Vatican territory.
That's right.
I'm sorry. Their Vietnam territory. That's where the gold was hidden. That's why they
The Vichy government, did you say? The French
government
collaborator?
In France,
yes.
In France. You're going there. They're going to be looking for you now that I've talked to you. But here's the thing. They smuggle most of the Nazi gold into that French colony, Vietnam, and the Vatican ordered John F. Kennedy to bring it back home. He wouldn't do it. He wouldn't put American lives at stake for Vatican gold. The Vatican inherited Nazi gold under the Concordat debt that they had with the Nazi government, the July 1933 Concordat. If you go back to former Coast to Coast AM shows, you will hear Jim Mars and George Norrie and myself talking about that war pact between the Italian government, the Vatican government, and the Nazi government in Germany.
Yes, and also the Dulles brothers helped England and America hide their money and made it very hard. You're onto something here. The gold in Vietnam, I had not heard. I'm going to check on that.
All about money, Richard.
Yeah, that's right. And but it's true. The Vatican is much more powerful than people think, and very little of what they do has to do with religion. Believe me.
Sad story there. Let's go to La.
That was very interesting.
Mirada, California. Raul, very interested indeed. Raul, go ahead.
Hi, Richard.
Hi.
Raul here in La Mirada. Hi. You're talking about the aliens there a while. The thing is that I think the aliens are around us, and they're just coming back to take over, you know, the Earth in a way. And
excuse me for interrupting. I don't think it's that kind of it's that simplistic that they're gonna if they are what some people think they are, they already can do whatever they want. There's nothing to take over. Obviously, they could have at any moment if they had the technology that we think they have. I think if anything's going on, there's a presence here. They're utilizing the Earth and us for whatever purposes they are. They don't need to, like, come back because they never were gone. In some people's view, they could have been here for a few hundred thousand years and interbred with humans. And I don't know. I just don't think there's going to be that big landing and they take over because they already could do whatever they want with us if they have that technology.
You wrote a book about Elvis?
No, I wrote a book called UFOs, JFK, and Elvis Conspiracies You Don't Have to Be Crazy to Believe. And the reason Elvis is in the title is because George Bush was once asked about the JFK assassination, and he goes, yeah, and Elvis is alive too. It's a way of marginalizing anybody that talks about the Kennedy assassination or UFOs. And George Bush, of all people, should know because he's a murderous, Nazi-loving piece of human detritus.
Hold on. Let's go to Robin in Oakland, California. Go ahead, Robin.
I didn't swear, George.
No, you didn't.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi. What a pleasure to speak to both of you.
Thank you.
Two quick questions.
Yes, ma'am.
One of them is, I would like to know both of your opinions with Ed Daines on last night.
Who?
Saying
Remote.
That Obama was going to be our last president. That's one thing.
I thought the Pope was the last. Oh, okay, I'm getting my...
Yeah, he said Daines. Daines said, hold on for one sec, we'll get back to that other question.
Yeah.
He said that on the program last night that 2016, there will be no more presidential elections.
Well,
because there'll be so much chaos, that will be it.
Yeah.
I think there will be.
Of course there will be. Has been wrong a lot, and he's also been eerily correct about some things. And the thing about what I learned from a remote viewer who was trained and...
Ingo was one of them.
In the Army. Not Ingo. This is someone else who knew. But anyway... The way he described to me the future, the past, George, is fixed. The future is changeable, which is very heartening because that means you can exercise your will over what we thought would be our destiny. But when this is what the future looks like, the top and the bottom is the past. And so that's very interesting to me that the future is not written.
It's not etched in stone.
There are things that are set in motion that could occur in the future, but there are ways of altering that.
Let's go to Robin's last question. Go ahead, Robin.
Thank you, Richard. You make me feel an awful lot better. The other thing I wanted to ask is, why do we allow our representatives, be they senators, representatives,
to do what?
State, local, whatever, to have one benefit that we as American
healthcare.
People are not allowed to
healthcare.
Have.
Healthcare. Yeah, there's no answer to that other than that a handful of people of like mind have appropriated a whole political party and can determine things that most people don't want. It's our system is broken in America.
Sadly.
Sadly.
Steven, Eugene, Oregon, it's your turn. Go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, hi, George and Richard. Pleasure. Hi. And George, Richard, I'm looking forward to getting your book and reading it.
Oh, thank you.
I applaud you on all your efforts to bring out even more information and truth about the JFK assassination.
Thank you.
And I think this nation ever wakes up and really gets this as a center stage, it could bring down this house of cards and shadow government and change us back to what we used to be. But what I wanted to talk about was kind of interesting about the witnesses that died either mysteriously
yeah.
or outright murder.
Right.
I have a situation, and I'll tell it quite quickly.
Sure.
I have a dear friend of mine who is an upstanding, well-to-do lady. She's in her 80s now, and I was visiting her back in the early 80s, and I don't know, the JFK assassination came up, and she goes, you know, I've never told anybody this before, but she says, I'm going to tell you. She says, I'm still scared to death about it. Anyway, she and her husband were living in New Orleans back in the 50s, late 50s.
Right.
Moved to Southern California in 62, and their neighbors in New Orleans are their best friends. One was an ex-UDT member of in the Navy, you know, now it's the SEALs.
Right.
And he had joined the CIA and
underwater demolition team.
Right. But yeah. then when he got out of the Navy, apparently he went into the CIA, and this is in the late 50s.
Right. 60s.
And he was gone quite a bit, but they were best friends. They would party together and have dinner together and all that. Anyway, she moved to Southern California with her husband. They had some kids, and they still kept in touch with this couple.
Right.
And this guy. So the assassination happened. Anyway, she was upset about that, and a few days later, after the assassination, she had a knock on the door in the late afternoon, and here was her friend, the husband, disheveled, distraught, just asking if he could come in and clean up and rest a little bit, and, you know, she
yeah.
didn't know what the heck was going on, but she said something was really wrong with this guy. Came in and showered. She got him something to eat. Her husband came home. She was taking care of the kids. Her husband talked to him a little bit. And he finally said, hey, I got to go. You know, they're after me. That's all she said.
Wow.
To her. And anyway, she asked her husband, because he had been talking to the husband, and he said, I don't know, man. He's just a mess. He said something about the JFK assassination and people.
What year was this?
This is right after the assassination.
Oh, so do you have a name?
I don't want to. I'm kind of nervous about this.
No, you could give me the name off the air, please.
Yeah, I can.
For my research. Can you do that?
Well, anyway, let me finish this.
Go ahead.
She said it was very upsetting. She knew something was wrong. She called his wife, and she didn't know anything about it. She said he had been gone because he would go away for a week, 2 weeks at a time. And she was just totally upset, and they had no idea what was going on. Anyway, they said they'd keep in touch and try to find out what was going on. The next morning, her husband went to work. She said mid-morning, she got a knock on the door, and there were two black suits there. And she said they scared the holy living. You
they
know
said,
what
where's the guy? Right?
Where's the guy? And she says, I don't know. He was here, and he left. And she said, that's why she never told anybody. She said,
I don't blame her.
She was still scared.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll be quick.
No, you won't. But go ahead.
But you better be, because yeah. the clock's on.
Yeah, we got other people on.
She called her wife, his wife again, and told her what happened, and her wife was just distraught because she hadn't heard from him or anything.
Oh, even the wife didn't know.
Yeah, well, anyway.
Yeah, thank you for that.
She said about a week or two later, his wife called her and said they found him in a creek in New Orleans drowned.
There you go, another death. I'm going to put you on hold, Stephen. If you want to give Tom your phone number for Richard.
Or just that
we'll
name,
and
we, you know, we won't say where we got it.
Enough.
Because that sounds very, very real.
So I'm reading the book,
yes.
and one of the chapters, of course, about Jimmy Hoffa.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
don't know if you knew, I was the last reporter to see him alive in
really?
July of 1975.
Where were you?
In
Detroit.
Yep, absolutely.
And so
walking him to his car after he was on our television show.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Telling me that he wanted to get back into the union, that, you know, he didn't care about the deal he cut to get out of prison.
Yeah.
He wanted back in. I never talked to him about Kennedy.
Of course not.
But, you know, he wanted back in, and then in a week or so, he was gone.
Oh, yeah. What was this? I'm always interested by the local. In other words, in Dallas, people knew a lot of stuff before the rest of the country.
Yeah.
And so you saw, what was the rumors or what was in the air in Detroit when he disappeared? What were the rumors floating around?
Well, we heard the stories that, you know, he was going to meet with a couple mobsters.
Yeah, and basically, that restaurant.
And, you know, he wanted their approval to come back and try to get Fitzsimmons back out of the Teamsters Union.
Right, he hated Fitzsimmons.
And though he appointed him when he left.
No, but he was jealous.
Yeah, exactly. Because Fitz didn't want to give it up.
No.
He had the power, and, you know, he was supposed to meet with him. I don't think the gangsters ever showed up at that restaurant. It was the Maucus Red Fox. And
somebody showed up.
There were rumors that his so-called non-birth son, Chucky O'Brien, met him, and that somebody
him
drove him somewhere and set him up.
Yeah,
that was never proven.
No, but he's not buried in Yankee Stadium.
No, he's not. I think he's crunched in some car somewhere. That's in some bumper
Of that of acid.
Yeah. Know. As a matter of fact, the serial killer that our friend Robert Dobby was in is in his movie, The Iceman Cometh, about Richard Kuklinski.
Right.
Kuklinski claims he's the one who killed Hoffa by stabbing him to death.
And then what?
And then they put him in, they burned him in a bin.
Right.
And then they took the bin, put it in a car and crunched the car, and it's in Japan somewhere.
Yeah, that I've heard that story, and
who knows?
Totally plausible.
Who knows? Richard, we're out of time.
Really? I want to apologize to all the callers that are hanging on.
They're still hanging for you.
Oh, you know what?
The book is called Hit List.
Hit List, available everywhere. My website, ibells.com. I have a talk show on YouTube.
Excellent.
Richard Belzer's Conversation.
You're everywhere.
And
your show on NBC goes on and on and on.
Law and Order. And support our vets.
Good
really,
for you. Richard,
it's very important.
It's always a pleasure
George,
to see you.
George, you're the best. Thank you so much.
You take care of yourself. Richard Belzer, the name of the book, Hit List. It's a great read, especially about, of course, all the witnesses who disappeared during the JFK assassination case. Truly remarkable. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burrows, George Knapp, John B. Wells, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, we'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.